welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening. Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your host, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com. That's timeforanawakening.com and listen to the live stream. From that location, you can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and listen to the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. That's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and listen to the live stream there. Or you can download, tune in to any of your carrier handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the auxiliary jack. Again, it's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. That's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And before you leave that page, do me a favor and hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for Awakening Media. The homepage is there. It should be one of your favorites. If not, put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. There you'll see a lot more interesting content, a podcast and blogs, podcasts and programs that you can download, listen at later times, even share with your friends. Again, the site is being revamped, and it'll be a new old site, so to speak. In a couple of weeks, we'll be adding some of the other podcasts of some of our other broadcasts. So you'll see the expansion of timeforawakening.com with some of the other hosts, and their podcasts will be added to the site. So again, make that one of your favorites and put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, we're in open form, Freestyle Friday, so to speak. Open forum with you as the special guest, our listeners. And we'll be kicking around just topics for discussion. And you can always throw in a topic that you want to discuss. Joining us for a Freestyle Friday open forum will be two of our other hosts in like a similar roundtable dialogue that we had about a month and a half ago. Happy to have Brother Oshi from African Perspectives and Dr. William Rogers from Black Reality Think Tank. Join myself and Brother Richard in our Freestyle Friday discussion open forum. And you can join too by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get things started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back. The time for an awakening, and before we get started with the program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir. Brother Allen.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. How are you this evening? I'm excited, though. I'm excited Brother Oshi and Dr. Rogers are with us. I really enjoyed our last ComFast. I think it was informative and, intellectually stimulating, and I hope that was also for the listening audience to have all these different points of view and us coming, just dealing with it. So,
I enjoyed that, kind of like roundtable discussion we had during the last open forum that we had with them. I guess it was about a month and a half ago.
Right.
And since then, their programs have been off to a rousing start. African Perspectives on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 11 to 1. And Black Reality Think Tank, been on a little hiatus because of a little equipment difficulties, but he'll be up and running at possibly this Saturday. We'll kind of talk with Dr. Rogers once he comes on, and we'll kind of start things. I just want to read this announcement. African Independence Day Organization Committee and the Urban Shaman Productions presents the second annual Buy Black Marketplace and Pre-Kwanzaa Celebration. Will be Saturday, December 23rd, 2017, at the historic Church of the Advocate at 1801 Diamond Street here in Philadelphia. The donation is $5 at the door, and children are admitted absolutely free. Special guest performances, speakers, the ceremonial lighting of the Kanara. Vendors are needed. If you're interested in vending, for more information, three ways you can contact. You can reach them by email at africanindependenceday@gmail.com. Again, that's africanindependenceday@gmail.com. You can reach them on the website by going to africanindependenceday.org. Again, that's africanindependenceday.org. Or you can give them a call at 267-521-1544. Again, that's 267-521-1544. That's the Buy Black Marketplace and Pre-Kwanzaa Celebration. Again, that's Saturday, December 23rd, 2017, at the historic Church of the Advocate, 1801 Diamond Street in Philadelphia. The admission is $5 at the door, but children are admitted absolutely free. It's Friday evening here in the city of Philadelphia at about 8:15 in the evening, a little crisp, brisk fall night here in Philadelphia. I know Brother Richard got four pair of long johns on.
Ellie, don't start me. Don't start me. I had to take them off because I was like sweating.
Yeah, I know it.
The thing, the temperature keep going up and down. I don't know about this, what they call it, global warming. I don't know if it's that or something else, which is an interesting point that I like to bring up too.
Yeah, maybe it's just Richard warming with four pair of long johns.
Hey, look, I'm a melanated man that have ancestral roots to the continent, and we are used to warm weather. Okay. I just was born in Philadelphia with cold.
Oh, boy. Tonight, again, we're in open forum this evening. Anything on your mind, you can give us a call at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. About a month and a half ago, we did a kind of roundtable discussion, open forum, when we had one of the Friday freestyles, and we had, at the time, they were new hosts. Now they're old hats at it, and we want to welcome in Brother Oshie from African Perspectives. Brother Oshie, how are you, sir?
Brother Elliot, Brother Richard, I'm doing fine. It is always a pleasure.
And we want to bring also in Dr. Rogers from Black Reality Think Tank. Dr. Rogers, are you there?
Yes, good evening, Brother Elliot, Brother Richard. How you doing?
Good.
Yeah, glad to have you men with us again. The last time both of you men were on with us on a Friday, you were kind of relatively new hosts. But since then, you got to be kind of a veteran at it, especially you, Brother Oshie, with African Perspectives on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And Dr. Rogers, you'll be kind of getting into the flow. I guess by this Saturday, you will have things up and running. But in perspective, talk about the perspective programs, both of the programs, how you've been faring so far, and just the feel of things broadcasting on Time for Awakening.
Well, for me, it has been a pleasure. And the quality of the program, the reach, the more people who can hear African Perspectives, from our Motherland Media Network, from myself, Us Lifting Us, and Dr. Rogers. So we're all happy to be part of the Time for an Awakening family. And it's been really good. I'm learning a lot more, as you know, Brother Elliot. I know there's been some times me and you have gone back and forth, and it's, you know, got a little frustrating, but I appreciate your patience and finally got it together. I'm pretty confident in what's happening with the program at this time.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Rogers, you'll be kind of getting into the flow of things. Yeah, a little equipment issues here and there, but you'll be joining the flow pretty soon, probably by this Saturday.
Yes, very excited. You know, it's a learning, like Brother Hoshi said, it's a learning curve. I mean, it really has been inspiring. The things that I have learned about podcasting, you know, and how the broadcasting system works. And like I said, I'm very excited about being on this platform, this network, because the audience is so dynamic. I've listened to several of your programs that you've done, you and Brother Richard have done, and I've just been so inspired by the discussion, and I just can't wait to get on to start doing this. I think one of my biggest challenges has been is that the area in which I'm living now is a new area, and so it's been very difficult working with the cable company. So the internet system has not been working properly like it should, and that has caused a major problem.
Okay.
Because without that, I can't do anything. But it seems that we've got it under control now, I think, and so therefore I'm going to make preparations to, you know, get ready to come on as soon as possible, you know, because I've got some folks lined up and they're excited, and I've kind of had to put them on hold a little bit. But they're waiting, and so I'm waiting as well. And I, like I said, I've just really been a wonderful learning curve for me.
Yeah, well, tonight we're in kind of a freestyle Friday mode, just open topics, open forum. And, you know, get the callers involved at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. One of the things I want to throw out and get you men perspective on is something that's been going on in the news for the past 2 weeks. The Western media kind of tried to spin it in one direction, but I'm glad we see it going in a more constructive direction for African folks worldwide. And I'm talking about the changing of the guard in Zimbabwe from President Mugabe to the former vice president, now the president, Emmerson Mnangagwa. I just want to read a portion of this published report, and then I'll spin it off and get all you men's opinion on it. Emmerson Mnangagwa has been sworn in as the third president of Zimbabwe since the country gained independence in 1980, taking the oath of office in front of 70,000 people in Harare's main sports stadium. Mnangagwa raised a loud cheer when he pledged that the free and fair elections would be held next year as scheduled, and the people's voice would be heard. I'm glad that this thing transpired the way it did. When it first hit the Western media, they were talking about tanks storming into the Capitol, and they really wanted some foolishness to start because that would open the door for Europeans to slip in to Zimbabwe, which they hadn't been able to do before. Talk about it from your men's perspectives, Brother Richard, Brother Oshi, and Dr. Rogers.
Well, I was glad that, as you say, that transition took place in the way it did. It does raise a lot of questions for us as new Africans when we look at those of us who aspire that the continent be a unified global economic entity, a global cultural and economic entity, as far as where Zimbabwe sits and where it's going. And I was excited that it didn't have a violent coup as it was projected. But I think that a lot of other questions that it provides us to kind of address or at least look into as we look at where Zimbabwe sit. And one of the main things and interesting things that I'll, you know, just stop with this is that I was really impressed to hear and understand that Zimbabwe is the only country that doesn't have AFCOM there. And I think that that's important, but the question is, as it moves on, can it continue to resist the American militarization of the continent, which it's already got its implant? And what does that mean as far as in the truly continental integration. As we look in the future, those of us who wants to see that there and abroad. So I'm glad that it happened, but it's some other social class and geopolitical issues that I think we need to flush out.
Brother Ogie?
One of the things that bothered me, I saw a piece where it said that the incoming president, and I understand and I agree with the transition. I was hoping that it would be done through Mugabe himself, developing a succession plan for him with the exclusion or not to accept his wife as the next president. I think that was, you know, but had that been done, I think would have had a lot smoother transition and into a government that I think that would speak well for the people. But what kind of disturbed me, I saw a piece that said that he's willing to work with the Caucasian farmers and the big agro people that are there in Zimbabwe, you know, and, you know, that's a big opening for the Europeans to come in there and once again control the resources of that country and in other places in Africa. And the fact that AFRICOM was not in Zimbabwe should be very telling about what's happening on the continent and its leadership, its overall leadership on the continent, that the recolonization and the taking of resources is very imminent. And when they argue that that was done by the West to kind of halt China's constant involvement in Africa. So I'm in a wait and see mode, of course, but I'm still not feeling this, and it's unfortunate. And I don't care about elections, democratic process myself. I'm more in favor of a elected or grouping of leadership, no particular party. We don't need no damn parties. We need a collective group of leadership that's going to speak well for the advancement of the people of their country and ultimately the continent. Because I'm a Pan-Africanist. I'm thinking and thinking like Patrice Lumumba and Kwame Nkrumah and Dr. Sheikh Adis Diop. They asked for and looked at a unification of African countries on the continent as one federation of African states. Because just because Ghana may be doing well, but its next door neighbor, Cote d'Ivoire, or something, they may not be doing well, and we need to find ways to make that happen. But it's not going to happen, of course, in its present state.
Dr. Rogers?
Okay. You know, I'm really glad that you started off with that discussion, because that's something that has been on my mind for a while. I've been following some stories. I think I called into Brother Ocean's program one day last week to talk about this whole Zimbabwe thing. One of the things that my observation has been is, you know, I try to look at a lot of different reading sources, particular, as you said, the Western media. But one of the publications that I read consistently is the Wall Street Journal. And the Wall Street Journal, the reason I do that is because they talk about, you know, current news, but they talk about it in a way that deals with the economics of it. And it's in the discussion of, so if, say, for instance, if there's somebody, if some terrorist does something, well, they'll report that, but they'll report it in the light of the how it's going to impact the market, how it's going to impact this. And so it gives you a real inside, you know, light, you know, even considering it's a Fox publication and, you know, the philosophy of Fox. But one of the things the Wall Street Journal has been doing for about the last 2 months is a lot of their front page stories have been about Africa. One of them has been about Kenya. They have been consistently covering this election in Kenya. And not just covering it from the news point, they're covering it on the front page at the top fold. Now, here's the question. Here's the critical thinking twister. What would a newspaper like the Wall Street Journal that represents the pulse of the economy of the world be so interested in Kenya that it would get the front page on the top fold? And obviously, we can answer that. And then from Kenya, they've been covering this thing, the story of Zimbabwe. And they have been, you know, focusing on that, not as much as they've done the Kenyan story. So in summarizing all of that, when you're looking at that whole southeastern region of Africa, you are looking at the most wealthy mineral source countries on the planet Earth. You're looking at raw material that run the industrial world. And it's not only just Zimbabwe and Kenya, it's Mozambique, it's Tanzania, and it's all of that land down at South Africa. And what's happening is there's a lot of cad. Now, Robert Mugabe posed a major problem, you know, with some of his ideology, you know, and the things that he was doing and what he was supporting. And basically, Mugabe was talking the same language that, say, maybe an Iran or, say, maybe a North Korea or somewhere like that would be talking. And it was obviously anti-West. So what would stop North Korea? What would stop some of the other countries that the West worries about from coming down into Zimbabwe, Mozambique, and see about extracting some of those minerals that are very important for nuclear development? So my conclusion is that this is what it's really all about. Kenya, as you know, has powerful source resources. But the people of Kenya are forced to be living in a little specific area where all of that game reserve in Kenya is wide open and is under the control of the British. And all of the people, the African people, are pushed into loose pockets of land, crowded in, living under some of the worst conditions, while England controls all of that open land. There's the possibility that I've read in some other areas that a lot of that open land is military training facilities for some of the Western powers that they're looking to build and put into place. And so I guess in to kind of close all this out, that whole area, that whole corridor, all of that, Mozambique, even Madagascar, which is an island sitting off of the East Coast, Madagascar is coffee rich. It's got the best coffee in the world. And all of that is under the control of the West, and Saudi Arabia is down in there, and obviously you know China is in there. So I think that's what we're looking at. Robert Mugabe was overthrown by the West. The CIA and the British intelligence and all these other intelligence networks, probably Israel, all went in there and paid off people, got folks to turn against him. And my theory is that was a Western coup, and it needed to happen right away because you've got some threats now that you got to shut off. You got to shut off the Arab threat. You got to shut off North Korea's threat. And what's to keep them from being able to get down into that area and get those resources?
Well, I guess the whole situation warrants us to keep an eye on it. I don't know whether I necessarily agree with that, Dr. Rogers, because I don't. It's no problem. I think it was more the. I don't want to term it ignorance, but Mugabe being 96 years old and even though he was a man, still had his faculties about him, it's only natural that things were slowing down. And just like Brother Osi mentioned about a succession plan and things of that nature, and it looked as if his wife was in line to become the leader of in Zimbabwe, and I don't know whether the people, and especially some of the other men that had given their lives to forge a direction for Zimbabwe, was too happy with that. Then some of the videos and all that some of his children put on social media, them with expensive watches and pouring champagne over gold, diamond encrusted watches and all the type of you know, excess, Western excess that that kind of leads our people down a bad road. Some of those things didn't look good. I know that some of you men saw those some footages of some of that type of stuff. I just think it deserves watching. I did see what you mentioned too, Brother Oshie, about the President Managua being open to dealing with European farmers. I don't know whether that's accurate. I don't know, because we're getting a lot of stuff from Western media, and I know that. The good thing about it is we do have a direct connection with one of the writers and publishers at the Herald, which is Zimbabwe's national newspaper, which is Brother Obi Egbona Jr., who was with us a couple of weeks ago. So, you know, I'll be able to get some things from him that is supposed to be released to the media and be able to at least give some accurate messages, or even bring him back on to give some accurate messages to what has been going on. When things started to change there in Zimbabwe, it was a message from the leader of the defense forces to ask the Herald to keep things kind of under wraps until it was able to get things stabilized with the government. So now that things are starting to stabilize, I think we'll be able to get more information and updates and all from Brother Obi Egbona Jr. in reference to the situation there in Zimbabwe.
But you know, Elliot, and I'm glad Dr. Rogers, you brought up about Kenya, because I'm looking at that too. Because besides the mineral wealth, one thing that I seen that came out of the elections was the issue around the protest by, I believe it was they call it the opposition leader, wanted to protest in relationship to this Saracom, the cell phone company. It seems that that cell phone company, which is in headquarters in Kenya, controls, but the major, a large part of the control, 40%, is controlled by Viafarm, which is a European company. So here you have not just, I mean, we're looking at, and we heard in Zimbabwe, one of the currency exchanges using bitcoins. What I'm trying to, and maybe y'all can help me flush this out, it seems that the continent is using the data of currency movement and communication more effectively as, quote unquote, a poor country than say even here, in the sense of you doing banking through these cell phones, and these are all going through these lines. So as you get more, and they're needing that. So not only is it the currency may be data driven in Southern Africa, but also the communication, and look who everybody has to have one, right? So look at the dollars that is going to be extracted going to Europe based off of everybody owning a phone and they controlling the information line. And if you look at the board of directors of Saracom, you'll see that though they're African, they're still Europeans on that board of directors. That's one.
Right.
I think that we... Brother Osi, I agree with you also that this question of from a Pan-African's perspective, the unification question is really like critical, which made me raise the question, where is the African Union in all of this? I mean, you know, like you heard nothing from them. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be like when we're talking about the at some point, and I was just saying to somebody else, why did it have to be Gaddafi to be the spearhead for the African countries to be able to come together? And what is the African Union really doing to foster that unification, whether by regional
or just by country to country trade? What are they doing? I can't really see that. And I think we need to flush that out as if we're moving towards that future. And my last point, and you kind of raised this, Elliot, with the with grace, because and I think that we, when we're talking about the point of the Black, the African elite, I don't think that we can discount the looking at the American African elite as it relates to their responsibility in creating policy programs and or opposition to the Western, as it relates to African people, the Western American driven, that they are cutting out everybody at the bottom end. Because that exhibition of grace, and I don't know, you know, and I wanted to, Ellie, I wanted to ask Obi about that before, because whether that's coming from the Western press or not, but that seemed to have been a big thing about her and the exaggeration. When I read that she got, what is a Rose, Mercedes-Benz shipped in, she goes on these European shopping trips, and as you raised, Elliot, not only her, but the young ones.
Yeah, the son, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I'm though they given a picture of those, when we look at where we, I think that we should look at it from a social class perspective of what about the wealth, quote unquote, middle class, because you see that exercise going on in South Africa. You see that exercise going on here.
Yes.
As far as that Black middle class that is able to go to the elite and Ivy schools or able to get into these Fortune 500 companies and whatever, even as employees here, they're part ownerships of productive resources there. There, are they truly looking at developing Africa as a continent or the people? Those exhibitions don't show that to me.
Well, I think it shows more of a personal type of showing of wealth or showing people what you got. That craving of European baubles, so to speak, has always been dangerous for our people, and Europeans use it because they feel as though that if they wave dollars in front of Black folks' faces, they'll basically do anything they want them to do, and sometimes they have been right. I think that we have to do all we can to fight those temptations and keep in mind that the bigger picture is our children and the future of our people instead of the future of one man's pocket or helping to get him the big house, the million-dollar home, the fancy car, and things of that nature. That's what Europeans have always used to kind of corrupt the morals of our people. But and we see that it crept in over there. That's why a change had to come about. So, what we're going to do, we're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll bring up a few other topics. We'll get some other folks involved in the conversation. And you could do that by dialing 215-490-9832 to join the conversation. That's 215-490-9832. We're in open forum, Freestyle Friday, so to speak, and we're in a roundtable discussion with two of our hosts, Brother Oshi of African Perspectives and Dr. William Rogers of Black Reality Think Tank. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Money, 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 money.
Welcome back. Time for an awakening. We're in Friday, Freestyle Friday, Friday Open Forum with our special guest joining us, host on Time for Awakening, Brother Oshi, with us from African Perspectives on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11 to 1. And Dr. William Rogers have joined us from Black Reality Think Tank, joining us in the Open Forum conversation. And you can be a part of the conversation too by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We got a call waiting, but before we take the call, let me, I do want to mention something because there's an article in the final call I want to share with you, man, to get your perspectives on it. We know that we just come out of one of the European holidays, one of their big celebrated holidays, which was Thanksgiving, which opens up the door to what they consider Black Friday. They want folks to go out and spend money leading up to the end of December, which is the Christmas holiday. Before I read this article, on the, just a portion of the article on the back, on in front from the final call to get you men's opinion on, let me play this clip to set up the article, a clip by one of our former guests that was with us, Bob Law. Let me play it.
We have launched an economic withdrawal movement that has begun to actually pay off. It has begun to work, as Black organizations all over the country have been urging and encouraging Black people to use our dollars strategically, and it is beginning to take effect. But I want you to understand, this is not a Christmas or a holiday boycott. We're calling on our people to use our dollars strategically from now on, to become conscious consumers from now on, to make where you spend your money a political decision. See, currently, Black people outspend every ethnic group in every consumer category. And we are spending with corporations that show a shameful disregard for Black life, corporations that do not reinvest in the Black community as they do in white communities, corporations that do not support any of our legitimate struggles for justice and equity in this society. Now, let's be clear. It is not how much you spend that demands respect. It is when you control your spending, when you withhold your dollars, when you use your money strategically, that is when you influence policy, corporate and political policymakers. So I want you to consider this. Continue to spend strategically. No more reckless spending. No more trying to spend money to impress people. If you want to impress them, let's hold on to our money. Make people earn Black dollars. Black lives and Black dollars really do matter. Consider this. No justice, no profit.
Now, 2 or 3 weeks ago, we had some of the organizers of the No Justice, No Profit movement down in St. Louis where it started. That video was made by Bob Law in St. Louis in 2014 when the initiative or the movement started. I want to share with you this article here from the final call and get you men's opinions on it. It's entitled No Justice, No Profit, as Not Spending Becomes a Weapon for Justice. It says Bloomberg reported that since 2016, the industry has experienced what is being dubbed as a retail apocalypse, despite plans to open 3,044 new stores this year. The first three quarters of 2017 has resulted in a staggering announcement of 6,752 closings, the highest in retail history as of June. Bankruptcy, Bankruptcy.com reported that at least 300 retailers have already filed bankruptcy. And by the end of the calendar year, Credit Sunrise predicted that as many as 8,600 brick-and-mortar storefronts will close their doors for good. With black people now being encouraged to use their estimated $1.2 trillion in spending power as a weapon against injustice and as a tool to support black-owned businesses, the effects of the continued economic boycotts has been insurmountable. Some analysts have blamed retail losses on the growth of online retailers like Amazon, coupled with a shift in the millennial mindset and opting to spend more money on life experiences rather than on material things. The reality of the fact is because the economic boycotts, people just aren't spending as much as they once did. Retailers, as a result, are drowning in debt, and financial community has lost faith in their ability to generate revenue. Man, look at this movement since 2014. We can see that Europeans are feeling the crunch of it. Bloomberg and others have reported a high foreclosure rate of businesses. So we see that this is having effect, even though if we look out there among some of our folks, they're still running and spending with businesses with reckless abandon. But we can see that it's that the movement is having a effect on white businesses. Your opinions on the Final Call article in relation to the No Justice, No Profit movement?
I'll let you go with that, Brother O.C.
Okay.
I don't want to go ahead.
Well, let me say it this way, that we have been trained to be a targeted consumer group. And in that training, a lot of us just don't want to let that habit go. We spend, even though there have been closings of retail stores and strip malls and so forth. The online business is booming. It boomed yesterday, even more so than going to the mall. And just like you said, they had like 2,000 or 3,000 people waiting outside of the Mall of America in the suburb of Minneapolis. And you've seen some of the people rushing into the stores to get all these so-called deals and so forth on Black Friday, you know. But the reality is that this system is theirs. And how they want us to act and behave in this system is how we behave and act in this system. I understand George Klingman and the brother he just had who talked about, you know, being wise with our money and so forth. We've constantly talked about that. I'm with Us Lifting Us, which is trying to help us understand to be collective, to pull our monies together, to, you know, provide goods and services for our people, you know, and it's very slow because of our training. We have been trained to be a targeted consumer group. It's a damn shame that here in Atlanta, we don't own one supermarket. We have more American Africans that are doing well, although this is the widest income disparity of any American African community in the country, of those of us who have and those of us who have not. But even though those of us who have, and there are some communities that they're beautiful homes, inside and out, gated, cul-de-sacs, subdivisions, whatever, but they don't have any businesses within those areas that are ours. They go to the nearest mall or to the nearest supermarket, shopping center, whatever. So the fact that we have never been able to aggregate our money, pull that money together to make it work for us. I understand what people are saying in terms of using our money wisely and boycotting and so forth. But the reality is, as long as we're in this system and it is theirs, this is how we're going to behave.
Wow. Okay. Dr. Rogers?
I definitely agree with that, Brother Ushi. I haven't read the article, but I get a sense from your reading what the point is. And I mean, the picture is bleak. It's been bleak for a long time. It's mm-hmm. just not just happening. I think the key is that even though it may seem dismal, however, I think there is some hope in it, and it is an education, economic education. You have to remember, I think one of the things is that the indoctrination of young people and coming up through the school system, they no longer have that. You don't have classes on business and economics and, you know, those kinds of things that maybe they had years ago, because I do recall some initiatives like that were done in public schools. But you don't have any of that now. You obviously don't have it in universities, and not least in the African-American university, you don't have that. So I think that it has to begin there. People have to be educated. The community has to be educated on the whole principle and dynamics of economics. You know, it really is. It's, that's what Booker T. Washington was trying to do with the Negro Business League that he had started. He had a component built in there to teach business. That's what Tuskegee was doing. Was trying to teach the community, young people, up-and-coming potential entrepreneurs, you know, on actually how to run a business. And see, it goes beyond just the buying and selling of material. You know, it goes into the marketing process, the looking at it from even a global kind of process, the accounting system, the accounting structure, warehousing and storage. I read an article once that the reason that Walmart was so successful in their whole development coming up from the beginning, back when Sam Walton was around, was that they had one of the most sophisticated inventory systems anywhere in the world. And that inventory system helped them propel the ability to sell goods and products. And as a result, Walmart took off overnight. Amazon is doing that. Amazon is God on earth. You know, they do everything. But the deal is they have sophistication in terms of inventory. They bring in specialists and consultants, you know, and I think, you know, our community has to do that as well. And we've kind of lost that. All of our black banks have closed. Right now, I know in Milwaukee, I don't know, Brother Oshie, I don't think there's any black banks anymore.
No, there isn't.
Savings. But
yeah,
again,
no, there isn't. There are no more black banks in Milwaukee.
Right. So, you know, all of that has to be in place, you know, to make things work. You have to have that. And so I think that's where you're going to have to begin to address in terms of that educational and have that begin to build at the pillars, you know, of any kind of economic program.
You know, I agree with both you, Brother Oshie, and you, Dr. Rogers. The thing I see, because you can look at any situation and always see a glass half empty or half full. The thing I see is that structurally, I think that our people, the framework is there for the reclamation of our people. The knowledge base is there. The pulling from our elders is there. The messages that our ancestors have left are here. A lot of the education is here. But I think this European siphons off a lot of our education and uses it for his benefit. If something can happen, and I think it's happening slowly but surely, to change the mindset, especially of our young people in school, the young minds, to come back and start reinvesting their mentality and their brain power in the reclamation of our people, this situation can change overnight. So, I mean, when we look at the situation, we always see it, you know, I agree with you, man. When I look and see our people running, breaking people's necks to go in these malls and spend their money without any conscience, you know, sometimes you say, well, what is it going to do to change the mindset of some of our people? But it's happening. It is happening. And the thing that can change this overnight is just a couple of folks I mean, it has happened historically in this country for our people, that situations will happen and change things overnight almost. And
what's going to do that, Brother Elliot, is a kind of education that can make that happen.
I fully agree.
That would be outside of the educational process that we're receiving either in public school, even private school, or some called charter or choice schools. We need an educational process that is independent of that, that helps us understand who we are as African men and women in our place in the world.
Because I agree.
The educational process that we have continues to make us, you know, the puppets and docile to this particular system.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm saying that you know, we can feel encouraged. But I'm not at this time, although I'm optimistic. I don't want to be contradictory, you know, but it doesn't look good, but I'm optimistic because I do believe that a cadre of leadership will come into being that will help us get out of this madness that we're in. But we will not get in it. We will not get out of it until we release that vice grip that these Caucasians have on our minds. It is about the mind.
Oh,
a lot of us,
most definitely.
We don't have the will to do it.
And I think that we should also, you know, focus our attention on the economy. You know, Dr. Rogers was saying all the things you need to have in order to have a social economy. But I guess what I'm looking at is to add in the sense of there are I see young people who are doing that, not necessarily just being. And I like what Bob Law said, being strategic, right? And I say young people, I'm saying I see those, it's a small group that are raising the right question in the sense of and trying to do the cultural, they're educating themselves culturally, they're educating themselves politically, and they're trying to create networks within themselves. And I think that we should be, the challenge is always being able to see those. And Brother Osi, when you were saying about us lifting us, I think that that's where I see the economy and scale, because it doesn't seem big, like it's not droves. Those who I call on this African project, it's a small community, but we have to figure out how do we get to see them. And I'll, you know, one thing that gets me is that whether the economy struck value is communal. I don't think that we're, and that'll make the distinction of whether how much you can actually change people from being engaged in this Euro-American or Euro-Western economic order. Because I believe, and I think I've said it before, I think there is a large population of American Africans and going back to the continental Africans who have consciously bought in to the Euro-American Western economic order.
Oh, certainly.
And if we try to focus our attention on trying to look at our formation from whether we have convinced them to move, then we will be looking at it from a perspective of half empty, half full, compared to that there is some, I don't know how or why we come online. Know that we have to do it. Do this. We took on this project of creating this new African, and I think that they're out there and they are doing communal things and whatever. It's just that we need to give them assistance, and also for those who are using their strategic dollars. For me, the yardstick will be in how much are you taking and investing those dollars in educating those children, because we can't rely on the state to do it. We can't rely on the government, public education, charter education, or whatever. But how much we can be able to rely on looking at our children's development as an investment compared to it's just something that we have to do. And in investing, we will be investing in their cultural development and in their skill development and in their then being able to do the trade with other African, Caribbean, and South American countries based off of developing what they call human capital or African capital, which we will control. That's what I see. So it gets conflicting. It's good that they're do that, but I always raise, can we
buy our way out of this oppression. I don't think we can.
No.
Let me add a couple calls to the mix. Let's go to 602. 602.
Yes, yes, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, Brother Oshi and Brother Dr. Rogers. This is Marcos from Memphis.
How are you, sir?
Good evening, sir. Good evening. How are you doing?
All right. Yes, you know, you talk about one of our main problems as a people is organization, lack of organization.
Okay.
So we have to study the mechanics of organization, you know, how do we get ourselves organized? Because that's really one of our big pitfalls. Now, I have a few little things here. He said, you know, as Africans, you know, we have few friends. We have no friends outside the race and very few friends within currently. So, you know, all them people in Africa, they ain't our friends. All them ethnic groups, they're looking out for their self-interest. But, you know, the other day I was looking at a video of Dr. Amos Wilson, and he was saying, he said, how does one-tenth of the world's population, white folks, control nine-tenths of the world's population? Mm-hmm. And the main thing they do, they recruit from the same group they are oppressing. You see, they in order for them to stay in power, they have to recruit from the same group that they are oppressing. And that's where you have all these elites and stuff, because they buy into the system. You see, they're a part of the system. You see, so you know, that's the way he's able to control, because if he was just him by himself, he couldn't do it, you see. So he has to recruit from the same group that he's oppressing. Now, the reason those aliens are in Africa is primarily because we ain't there. You see, we have to look about where we at. We are not there in Africa, you see. The Chinese man is there and all these other ethnic groups are there. But we as Africans in the West, we are not there. We have to figure out how can we get in there to help to alleviate that situation there, you know, because, you know, we are the only ones that's going to save Africa. The African is going to have to save Africa. Now, they ask the question about Mr. Garvey. You know, how was Mr. Garvey able to do that in that time? And he didn't have no technology that we have today. He didn't have WhatsApp and Facebook and social media. But one thing I saw that he had the Negro World, and he was able to put it in different languages. He had it in English, French, Spanish, you know, no, add Portuguese to it, because we have a big African population down there in Brazil. Mm-hmm. So we have to find a way, how can we develop a mass movement of our people to go and retake Africa, go and save Africa. You see what I'm saying? We have to be an integral part economically, culturally, to save Africa. Oh, we here in the West, because we have to remember, you know, we are ahead of our people and the continent at least 100 years psychologically, technologically, with capital. So we have the means here to do it. And as you say, some of those resources that we're not spending here, let's invest in Africa. Let's invest in, you know, so much. There are so much resources in Africa. Cobalt. Cobalt right. Is $52,000 a metric ton. So I'm saying, so all those resources, you know, the gold, you know, the other strategic minerals there, uranium, you know, that we, you know, so we have to figure out how can we, you know, get that involved. But I believe we're going to win this struggle. In spite of what we see happening, you see, the European, he's in trouble right now. He's in trouble in the West here, in America. He's in trouble in Europe there, you know. So if you really watch what's going on, you know, this thing is beginning to crack at the scene. Mm. So all we have to do is intensify what we're doing through programs like here that we're doing, and our propaganda to get our information out there. And as I said, translated from into Spanish, into Portuguese, you know, and step up our propaganda program. Because, as I said, we ain't been here on this planet this long time being stupid people. You see what I'm saying? We, you know, we have been here the longest, and we know how to live. We know how to survive, and we're going to win this struggle. You see, so in spite of why you don't get despondent, we just got to step up our program, which we are doing with programs like this and, you know, other programs. Keep up the good work, brothers, and I'll continue listening. Thank you so much.
Great call, Brother Thank Marcus. You. Thank you for your call.
Brother Elliot.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Brother Elliot, do you mind if I add or just want to add on something to what the gentleman said? He's so right, and that's what I was trying to say in my analysis in the beginning on Zimbabwe, is that these resources are really the political agenda of the world. They are set up politically. The world, there's some indication, for instance, that Iran has been talking to Zimbabwe, you know, and that's one of the reasons why Mugabe had to go, because, you know, those countries that need those resources. Right now, he mentioned cobalt. Cobalt is used to make cell phones and those lithium batteries. And there has to be, right now, Apple, you know, and all of those cell phone magnets have to have access to that. And so, therefore, Africa is on that chain of top 10 nations that have cobalt. Now, I know Russia has cobalt, Jamaica has cobalt, but very large depositories of cobalt are in Zimbabwe, the Congo, and Mozambique. And so, therefore, whatever those companies need, they will be assured politically that they will control. Now, how all of that works is that I think I'm saying that even as we talk about building this economic base, we've got to look at Africa as a model. That is the model. You can't look, I don't think that we can look at how the American economic system is in reference to duplicating that for ourselves. That's a whole nother paradigm, because number one, we've got to control the land. You have to have that land. You know, without that land, you have nothing. And so Africa still has the potential of being able to acquire land. And land is the basis, as you know, of all wealth. So if we have no land, you can't do much. You're real limited. Development you got. So I think that's the key. Keep our eyes on Africa. We have to do that. I'm glad, as I said, I'm real glad you started off with that Zimbabwe analysis, because we're going to have to do that a lot more.
Yeah.
And I've come out of the back and forth around the economic, what should be our economic primacy. And brother had mentioned, Amos Wilson, and one thing that I walked away from listening to Amos, that recognizing land and acquisition of material is important. If we can't create the value system and the social relationship, then we have no organization. I mean, that's, and everything else comes after that. And because of our particular experience, I mean, Africans globally have a particular experience unlike any other people at this present time by being disrupted. So if we don't take care of, we don't take control over the one thing that was the primary thing that was taken from us, and create a social economic relationship out of that where it's productive in relationship that it feed, clothes, and protects ourselves, and that is ourselves. So, though I understand the land issue as a acquisition of developing wealth, I can't see, and I'm always looking for, you know, I probably is a belief, so I don't know if I'll change, but I'm open to hear the counter or understand the counter when we are always constantly saying, we have to get to the minds and bodies of our people first.
So if we don't control our minds and body, and the brother had just said that, you know, that the West European takes and picks off the most skillful, or even develops the most skillful of us, and to utilize for their system. But the question is, where do we have an organizational infrastructure that we are taking off the best of our African selves, developing them, and then sending them, whether as emissaries or as negotiators or as trade relators, meaning that we're going to Africa with something, and we can go with the knowledge and skills to help deal with assisting in the land development, whether that be solar energy or mining or agriculture. You know, that's where I see that our primary effort has to start first, is in developing our African resource and our social relationship, which will develop our organization, which will develop our productive outcome as far as feed, clothing, and protection of ourselves. It's not a contradiction. It's just another way to look at it.
Okay.
Let's go to Colorado Springs. Colorado Springs.
Hey, Richard.
Hey, sir. How are you?
I'm good. How y'all doing this Friday?
Great.
Okay, I wasn't trying to comment. I was listening, but since you pulled me up, I'll go ahead and say something. I agree wholeheartedly with Richard that we need self-identity. We really are suffering from that, and it's something that I see gets rejected a lot when we try, you know, people try to bring information to us. If we can't see it being sold on TV or some lights and some type of glitter and glam, it just doesn't pique the interest of us. I see a lot of refusal for us to even want to look back 30, 25 years ago. Most people don't even think about the Rodney King situation, which is not even a whole 30 years ago. You know, riots and stuff like that right here in our own midst. So I think what Richard is saying is ultimately true. As I've told you gentlemen before on this show, I've been doing my own lineage, genealogy, and some of the things I keep coming up with us as a people that made it so easy for other people to come in being ourselves is we've had a lot of problems with factionalism, a lot of petty bickering. And I think for us, the most drastic thing we can do now is get some identity so we can determine what it is. Even if we get the land, we'll just destroy it because we haven't figured out who we are and who we want to be. Thank you, Jim.
Ramon, hey, thank you for your contribution, man. Let's go to BTR in North Carolina.
Hey, what's going on?
How are you, sir?
What's up now? How you feel now?
Hey, we're doing the best I can. I think I heard Brother Oshie on the line, of course, Brother Richard, and hello to you tonight as well, Brother Elliot.
And Dr. Rogers from Black Reality Think Tank.
Greetings to you. Hello, brother. Greetings to you, Dr. Rogers. Couple of things, and just real quick on some of the stuff that y'all covered. You know, I was just thinking the other day in terms of what went down in Zimbabwe and the spending habits of Mrs. Mugabe. I don't know her first name, but it's his
Grace.
Second wife. Grace. Thank you, Elliot.
No, Richard.
And she was spending a lot of money, man, on Western, everything y'all was talking about, the same way that we program to put materialism before substance and investing in our community. We run out to Walmart, was mentioned, Targets. Now, even what y'all mentioned, Jeff Bezos' company, Amazon, I believe it is. He's worth something like, I think I read today, $10 billion or $11 billion. He's now hosting the cloud service for the CIA. That was right under the news radar, but he just took on. And so what I'm talking about is the boycott aspect of it. you know, I appreciate some of the elders that teach black business that at one time was talking about, you know, it's a lot of money being made off prisons. And so since black people fill them up the most, then black businesses ought to be getting some of that government money. But that's slavery. And them elders acknowledge that, and now they abolitionists, and they're telling people about you're going to invest your money in where you buy from. Like you were saying, these businesses are still using slave labor through the 13th Amendment as punishment for crime. So we definitely got to keep that in our consciousness if we're talking about businesses and any kind of investments. And I am glad to say it's not enough, but because, you know, my work with Black Talk Radio Network, I pretty much hear all the radio programs and hear all the different guests that's putting forth positive examples in a community, whether they're in Baltimore, whether they're in St. Louis, you know, just people from all over the country that is putting in work. But like you all talked about, the celebrity, everybody want to be a celebrity. And I think Grace Mugabe fell victim to that, man, because in Africa, they watch. Look, it's six media companies that own all the media seen by 90. They own 95% of what's seen by the entire world. Mm-hmm. So our people in Africa is getting infected. That's how they spread that programming. If you examine Certainly. Her life, what was reported about her spending habits, she wasn't buying black. She was buying Asian. She was going to Asian companies, going on shopping sprees she wasn't buying black. So it's not something that's specific to black people or Afro-descendant people, no matter where they are in the world, because we all being fed. People, regardless of their skin color, religious classification, we all being fed the same program to a certain level. On the identity thing, you know, people had to look up individually who they are. They had to go through their census records, especially if you're a descendant of victims of slavery. Some people call them descendants of slaves. That's a dehumanizing term to me. So especially if the majority of us who identify as black, we need to do that research. That's where you get your personal identity to in. And to be honest with you, Afro-Americans are the most genetically diverse population on the planet because of slavery and what have you. So our family trees could go off in all kind of directions. So I like, you know, organizing around abolishing slavery. And, of course, racism is an aspect of that. And it just all the rest of everything else is trickling down from those two evils, in my opinion. So my identity is an abolitionist, and then I'm black. You know, so I just wanted to call in and share that information with you all. And also, great job in Zimbabwe, man. You know, I don't think there was minimum loss of life. I haven't even heard any reports of any deaths. And again, the enemy, as I did in a piece and documented, rode in the hill, this white woman with a Jewish name, was telling Trump, hey, let's offer Zimbabwe some money, okay, and get our partners in the African Union and get them to influence them. So, you know, Zimbabwe is being targeted right now, but for them to go through that change of power, because listen, we ain't got to be like them Roman Catholics and have a 100-year-old man sitting up there with a title. And you know, I'm talking about the Pope, you know, these men, let me God be retired, man, and dream about the days of his youth. That's what old men supposed to do. We don't need no symbols sitting up, man. That baton has to be passed. And the way, you know, they saw what was going on, in my opinion, in the people, because it seemed like all the people were in agreement with what happened. They even went through the legal procedures, through the Constitution and through the party. And so, you know, that was really professional, man, because we tend to think that our people aren't smart, aren't intellectual, and Zimbabwe just showed you right there how to guard against, you know, to protect revolutionary ideals and kick the West out, influence out. But the last thing I want to mention, Elliot, is in April and in 2011, we was telling people about Obama. I heard it talked about on Time for Awakening, Obama and Clinton, what they did to Gaddafi. He's a member, that nation was a member of the African Union. Mm-hmm. What their status is now, I don't know. But I sure ain't seeing the African Union making no moves. And I'm sure everybody seeing them pictures of what them Arabs doing.
The slavery going on. Africans. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I seen pictures that they got them tied up to the side of the building, three at a time in a bunch. One looked like he done passed out. This is, let me just.
And when you not only don't hear the African Union saying anything, you don't hear the World Cup, this United States saying anything. And they knew this atrocities was going on.
I'm calling Patrick McHenry, already called him out, Tom Tillis, and Richard Burr, the federal representative. I'm not saying they my representatives, but they the representatives. They was elected over these districts. And I'm telling them to go in there and clean up Obama-Clinton mess. Go put some boots on the ground for that, because you caused it. You know what I'm saying? Because we can't sit around waiting on Africans to solve that problem, because they would have been solved it in 2011 when it was first being reported. But I'm glad to see people taking notice of that and them pictures being smuggled out of there. But, I mean, even during the overthrow, it was pictures of Africans in cages and they being called dogs and abused. And man, they left. I've posted photos on social media of mass graves of black bodies that them Arabs then put in holes.
Yeah, and before that, it was that ethnic cleansing that went on in two of the cities there where thousands of people were murdered.
Yes. And now it take these, and I'm going to keep it cool, these white corporate medias to tell you, but when independent black media based on the internet is telling you, you know, you wasn't taking it serious or like we might have been reporting rumors or something.
And you didn't hear it come up at the Congressional Black Caucus in any kind of way either.
Exactly. So call
or the NAACP.
Call these people. We can't sit back and complain. Call. We use every tool and option available to us, but man, that's just so embarrassing to live in the 21st century and you got even international illegal slavery like that and then legalized so-called slavery right here in America. Y'all
you know what?
We got to figure this out.
Before you leave, Scotty, it's something that I didn't realize. And you got Kamala Harris, who they tout as some black messiah, black political messiah, and others. But Kamala Harris is from California. And I didn't realize till recently that they was using brothers and sisters that were in prison, like you said, modern-day slavery, and sending them out there to fight those California fires. Now, to be a fireman, it takes training. And those guys make a lot of money.
They give them some little six-week training.
Yeah, but they don't.
Like
come
that.
On, they don't make minimum wage, and they're not properly trained. How do you send? And I think one of the men had been killed. How do you send men out there?
Wait a minute, man! A bunch of people been killed. They've been doing this since the 70s, y'all, in California. If it wasn't fighting fires, it's doing everything else. Bill Clinton and them had them all up. They're in the government mansions, being servants and slaves and. And then so, you know, the firefighting has been getting attention lately, but this kind of stuff been going on since convict leasing, 1800. You know what I'm saying? That's what the 13th Amendment was designed to do.
Brother Scotty, thanks for your contribution, man.
All right. Keep doing what y'all brothers doing. Peace.
All right.
Peace, bro. Mm-hmm.
Listen, we're going to take a brief break. And when we come back, we got a call waiting. In fact, we got a couple calls waiting. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to continue the conversation. And you can be involved, too, by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're in kind of a Freestyle Friday open forum with two of our Time for Awakening host, Brother Oji of African Perspectives, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11 to 1, and Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers on Saturdays from 4 to 6 is joining us in the roundtable discussion. And like I said, you can be involved too, and we'll be right back.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
New age is upon us, yet the past refuses to rest in its shallow grave. For those who hide behind the false image of the Son of Man shall stand before God, 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 God.
Voice of racism preaching the gospel is devilish. A fake church called the prophet Muhammad a terrorist. Forgetting God is not religion, but a spiritual bond. And Jesus is the most quoted prophet in the Quran. They bombed innocent people trying to murder Saddam. When you gave them those chemical weapons to go to war with Iran. This is the information that they hold back from Peter Jennings. Cause Condoleezza Rice is just a new age Sally Hemings. I break it down with critical language and spiritual anguish. The Judas I hang with. The guilt of betraying Christ, who murdered him, stole his religion, and painted him white. Translated in psychologically tainted philosophy, conservative political right wing ideology. Glued together sloppily, the blasphemy of a nation. Got my back to the wall, cause I'm facing assassination. Guantanamo Bay, federal incarceration. nation. How could this be? The land of the free, home of the brave, indigenous Holocaust, and the home of the slaves. Corporate America, dancing offbeat to the rhythm. You really think this country never sponsored terrorism? Human rights violations, we continue the saga. El Salvador and the Contras and Nicaragua. And on top of that, you still want to take me to prison just because I won't trade humanity for patriotism. It's like MK Ultra controlling your brain, suggestive thinking, causing your perspective to change. They want to rearrange the whole point of view of the ghetto. The fourth branch of the government wants to settle. A bandana full of glittering generality, fighting for freedom and fighting terror. But what's reality? Read about the history of the place that we live in, and stop letting corporate news tell lies to your children. Flow like the blood of Abraham through the Jews and the Arabs, broken apart like a woman's heart, abused in the marriage to bring up holy war, bottled up like a miscarriage. Embedded correspondents don't tell the source of the tension, and they refuse to even mention European intervention or the massacres in Jenin. The innocent screams, U.S. manufactured missiles and M16s, weapon contracts and corrupted American dreams. Media censorship blocking out the video screens. A continent of oil kingdoms bought for a bargain. Democracy is just a word when the people are starving. The average citizen made to be blind to the reason. A desert full of genocide where the bodies are freezing, and the world doesn't believe that you're fighting for freedom because you fucked the Middle East and gave birth to a demon. It's open season with the CIA bugging my crib, trapped in a ghetto region like a Palestinian kid, where nobody gives a fuck whether you die or you live. I'm trying to give the truth, and I know the price is my life, but when I'm gone, they'll sing a song about immortal technique, who beheaded the president and the princes and sheiks. You don't give a fuck about us. I can see through your facade like a fallen angel standing in the presence of God. Bitch niggas scared of the truth when it looks at you hard. It's like MK Ultra controlling your brain, suggestive thinking causing your perspective to change. They want to rearrange the whole point of view in the ghetto. The fourth branch of the government want us to settle. A bandana full of glittering generality, fighting for freedom and fighting terror. But what's reality? Martial law is coming soon to the hood to kill yo, while you hanging your flag out your project window.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And we're in open forum tonight, Freestyle Friday. Anything that's on your mind, you can give us a call, throw it into the mix by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Myself and Brother Richard are joined by two other hosts, Brother Oshi of African Perspectives on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11 to 1, and Dr. William Rogers of Black Reality Think Tank on Saturdays from 4 to 6. And let's go back to the phones. Let's go to 646. Hey, brother, what's happening?
Hotep to the great brothers on the panel. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir.
Did you get your rest today, man, or was you on the plantation?
Hey, look, I can't be
answer
a
real one.
You know what? I have to say, the wonderful Brother O.C., I'll be there like, at least my mind can be free, because I take the opportunity on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to kind of free up by listening to him, which means that I get to listen to you, which means that I'm sitting back there like, dang, I can't concentrate.
All right, Richard, I'm trying to keep you awoke on the job. But listen, let's start here with another Mistress Magic Negro, Kamala Harris. She's nothing more than a bedwinch. Let's be clear. Let's discuss how she came into prominence on her back with Willie Wilson out there in San Francisco. Let's put the story out there so when the narrative is put forward to the community, she's an immoral woman, okay? And on top of that, she got a pale-skinned devil as a husband. So, you know, this is nothing more than Negroes looking for somebody to make them feel good. You know what I mean? And that, in that Halle Berry movie, Monster's Ball, make me feel good. That's all she is. She is someone who hasn't done nothing to warrant being in that position, because she really has no position that's in the best interest of African people. She's a panderer to Israel. So once you become a panderer to Israel, I ain't got no respect for you. So let's not play no games with her. She worse than Cory Booker, and I think everybody knows how bad Cory Booker is. You know what I mean? We just got to be honest about it. So now you're gonna give us a horror show like Hillary Clinton, and you're not going to replace her with a black woman who's immoral. You know what I mean? And yeah. Try to dress this pig up. You know what I mean? She's a pig. It's straight up. She hasn't done nothing to be warrant other than a pig. You see what I'm saying? Her history out in California has been a supporter of the prison industrial complex. She's done nothing to try and do anything of value to uplift African people. She's sleeping with the enemy. So what makes you think she's going to do anything whatsoever to liberate black people in America that's not in the interest of her mate? Come on. When are we going to figure this out? I mean, think about this. Everybody talks about Barack Obama. But look at his daughter. Now they're talking about his daughter on the internet kissing on the Neanderthal. So I guess the mama and the daddy ain't teach her nothing evil, right? See, this is there's no African value. What is the value system based on Europeanism? So what is based on Europeanism, you know it's not in whose best interest. Is it in me and your best interest?
Not at all.
No. Okay.
Absolutely so, not.
So we could go on to the next matter, Zimbabwe.
Uh-oh.
This is the deal with Zimbabwe. All I'm going to say about Zimbabwe is maybe they're looking for a better deal than what the West is going to give them. You know, my feelings on China is this. They know better than the white man, but the one thing that they will do is they will give you $1.50. instead of a dollar, and they won't try to totally come in there and steal it all and rape your woman. You know what I mean? What they do is they like to seduce your woman. They just don't brutally rape your women. You know? So we got to really look at that situation and see how it plays out. Now, the new president is talking about giving these crackers back to land. So whenever they have control of the land, what else do they have? Control of the resources. When you have control of the land and the resources, what can the nation do? Not a damn thing, but be embedded to who control the land and the resources. So that right there goes to show what the deal is. Now we can go and deal with Libya. The Arab. Okay, let's be very clear. The Arab is a smitten below a white man. That's all he is. His relationship to us has always been that of an enemy. And if you don't realize it, go into any black community today and look at how Arabs treat our people. And then go around the world and look at how Arabs treat our people. But the Negro always wanted to talk about Assalamu alaikum with them. You see? So now, here it is. They go into Libya and they now enslaving our people, killing our people, taking the organs from our people, selling it. You know what I mean? On top of that, here it is. Our people is giving them their hard-earned money to move them away from the carnage, and they enslaving them. But, you know, you got some Negroes who want to talk about the Arab, your friend.
But you know, now they are the middleman. I agree. But aren't they selling them to Italy? Aren't they selling them to European countries?
Now, what did that? That's, okay, so if that's the case, what did that tell you? If I don't eat pork and you eat pork, but I sell you pork, do that make me be any better than being a swine eater?
Oh man, what's it?
How you come into my community? You don't eat swine, but you sell me swine. So now I'm going to the corner store tomorrow, and I'm going to go into the Arab spot, and I'm seeing him making bacon, egg, and cheese. And when I ask the Arab, do you eat bacon? He tells you no. So then I ask him, why are you selling my people bacon? And you know what he tell me? Because your people eat bacon. But now I could go with him and take it to another level, but see, I already know I don't want to be sitting up in jail, so I just don't give him my money. You know what I'm saying? I just walk out. That's right. A conscious choice that we don't make.
Yeah, well, Jay, I hear what you're saying.
I mean, sometimes, you know, we got to really, really be honest about what our relationships are with these people. You know what I mean? Because the bottom line is nobody's a friend of the African. Nobody cares about us as a people. Nobody's trying to see us get back to the top. Nobody's trying to see us go homeward bound and reclaim what's ours and deal on the African level. Because you know the one thing is, we will treat them way better than they've ever treated us, because that's our humanity. That's just our nature. We're not the type of people who are going to do dirty to these enemies. But you know what the problem is? I think we may need to change our position a little and start hurting our enemies in a real serious way, because then maybe that'll wake them up to know that we need to be respected. Now, Brother Oshi and you, Brother Elliot, I need to ask y'all this question. There's a brother that I've come in contact with, Brother Tiki Ma'at Kilimanjaro. Do y'all brothers know him?
No, I don't.
Brother, let me tell you something. He is a brother that I hope that both of y'all get on your show. He's a brother that was at Howard. He did a lot of things at Florida State. He has this book called Maat, M-A-A-T. And I'm going to tell you something. If y'all get a chance to go on the internet and put his name and YouTube and look at a lecture that he did, y'all will be calling him up tomorrow. The brother is a real, real serious scholar. He has a university that he's trying to put together through University of Kemet Press. And the work that he's done, I'm just gathering information on him. It's some real serious work. He has something like 20 years of research, I think, and like 3 or 4 volumes of books. And the books are no joke. You know what I mean? He's someone that I hope y'all just take a minute and Google the brother, check the brother out, because he will definitely be on both of your shows immediately. He also has a book called BHA.
Was he the one that did that lecture with that group of young males in an African school?
That's him. Yeah.
How you spell that first name?
Him. And the thing is this: what he's done is he put together a group. They did the research. They kept their mouth quiet. They kept themselves shut out from publicity and all of that. And they gathered the work. They put together the volumes. They got some serious volumes of work.
Oh yeah, I got 2 of his books. Okay,
now you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
And now, because you know they've finished the work, they're ready to start presenting it to the community. And what he wants to do is from my understanding, he wants to put an African university online, I think, trying to charge our people something like, $100 a semester or maybe $100 a month or something like that. You know what I mean? To whereas he'll be able to get our people in tune with our Africanness. So I just hope maybe y'all could get in touch with him, you Brother OC or you Brother Richard, and interview him, because he's now ready to come out and, present the scholarship. And it's some serious scholarship from what I understand. Now, you said, Richard, you got two of his books?
Yeah.
How are they? How's the scholarship?
He's good. Matter of fact, he was just at the DEOP conference here in Philly. Was that about 3 weeks ago? And just an example of what you're saying, that one of the pieces that I walked away from his presentation was that he thought that we should create a calendar where we use the 7 days of the Nguso Saba instead of using the days of Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, that you would use Umoja and on as the days, and then that way you'll be constantly reinforcing the value. Mm-hmm. He's been working on the Metonetra as far as they just had a conference in Chicago, bringing all those who are dealing with the Metonetra, and he's also a part of that grouping that is going to take the Metonetra a usable language. Raketa Wimby was there. Dr. Mario Beattie was there. Matter of fact, I just, when we had a study program at the hall, UNIA, and I used this book because of what he's really got down to the grammar down. So, yes, I'm familiar.
Okay, well, I gotta order this book tonight. After I finish listening to your great Africans, and hopefully Elliot or you, Brother OC, you could get him on your program, because it seems like he may be our next presenter of some serious information that maybe we as a collective could follow to move us forward, because based on what I observed of him doing his research, the man put together a hell of a team that got something to present. You know what I mean? He's not like the internet scholars on YouTube, just talking nonsense. He got written work, so we could sit down and read it, and then if he's talking about putting together a university on the internet, that'd just be even more so. And like he said, he wasn't trying to make it expensive at all. He was just trying to make it to where he could get as many people possible to come in and enjoy it. But listen, man, as always, Brother Richard, Brother Elliot, Oshie, and the other Baba, y'all do great work, man. There's nothing like what y'all do, especially you, Brother Elliot. You're the best talk show host in internet radio, even though Oshie is, coming right behind you. And we got Richard there on Friday night getting a little woke, but he's ready to go on Sunday night because the daddy ain't working hard on Friday. Hotep, brother.
All right, peace, Jay.
All right, peace, my brother.
Hotep. You see what Hotep, he does? And Dr. Rogers, you see? That's a caller that, like, he works me.
Jay raised something originally that we talked about earlier, all four of us. See, this work is going on, and it's going on right under our noses. Even though we see some of our people, a portion of our people, a segment of our people acting a fool and acting like they don't have a care in the world and filling their mind up with all kind of foolishness, this work is going on with professors on these college campuses, whether they're HBCUs, whether they're independent black schools, whether they're even the regular campuses, because we didn't have plenty of professors on James Lance Taylor, Jared Ball, some of these professors on these regular campuses. And when I say regular, I'm talking about the white college campuses that's touching the minds of our resources, that's going to change the dynamic of what we're dealing with. Like you said, this brother that Jay was talking about was addressing some young people. A lot of those things are not going to go unheard. They're not going to.
That's why I'm optimistic.
Okay.
Although I speak about how devastating this has been, and it mm-hmm. sounds pessimistic, but I'm eternally optimistic. We were the first people on this planet. We gave the world basic disciplines of knowledge, and people used to come and far and wide to sit at our feet. This is our history. This is our legacy. Mm-hmm. All we got to do is release the vice grip that the Caucasian, the cracker has on our minds, so we can look at the situation for what it is, and so we can come together and do for ourselves. Because we can't change the way the Caucasian the way he thinks. He believes that he is superior. He suffers from cognitive dissonance. And there's nothing, and there's been consistent proof for the fact that he is not superior, but yet and still, because he that feeling that he has within him says that I'm not going to accept this. I am superior and I must be in control. I must be dominant. And we can't deal with that. What we have to do is change our minds in terms of how we relate to that.
Okay.
Because they're going to do what they're going to do. So, we can be aware and we can be cognizant of what moves they're going to make against us, because they're definitely going to do that, because they've always made moves against us. That's why our situation is so dire at this moment. But I'm eternally optimistic, and I will definitely be contacting the brother.
Ansar Imhotep is his name, and one of the books is King in Ancient Egyptian. He breaks down the meta nature, but yeah, he's very powerful. But and I agree with you, Brother OC. I think that when we make the analysis, it makes it seem like we're negative or that we're pessimistic. And there's some of us out there that truly are. It sounds to me that they truly are pessimistic, or they give the European too much power. I mean, sometimes I hear people and they really believe that these guys are all powerful, and it don't even make sense. It don't even make sense, but that's the way. But I think it's important for us to really be analytical and break apart all the component parts, because for what we're trying to do, we are trying, if I mean, at least from the vantage point I'm looking at, we're creating a new tomorrow for the planet and all the species and all the kinds at this moment. Because what they just did was disrupt the whole planetary arrangement as far as this unification. Only in 500 years. Some say a couple thousand, but in the last 500 years, put the nail in the coffin. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's a glorious project, to be able to create something anew, and take off using something from old. Because as you say, Doctor, we are old people. Yes. Very old people.
Oh, boy. Listen, we're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to continue the conversation. You can be involved, too, by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. It's Friday's Freestyle Friday open forum here on Time for Awakening, and we're joined by two other hosts, Brother Oshi of African Perspectives on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, and Dr. William Rogers on Saturdays from 4 to 6. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Not a Wu-Tang-a.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Are you one of the million conscious black people who believes that we have the collective wherewithal to affect real economic and political change? If so, band together in solidarity by joining the 1 million conscious black voters and contributors. Choose leadership that will work for the best interests of black people. We can no longer sit on the sidelines and expect things to change for the better without a significant number of black people playing a pivotal role in that effort. Will you be one of the million that recognizes that black dollars matter? Are you that person who believes it's time to leverage our votes for reciprocity from politicians? If so, then you should join the 1 million conscious black voters and contributors, with members in 29 states and growing every day. We encourage you to sign up and help spread the word by sharing our website, IamOneOfTheMillion.com. That's IamOneOfTheMillion.com.
Yo, throw that Bobby Hymn DVD in the garbage, man.
Come on, pass me that water, man.
Yeah. Speak to him, Lord. Somewhere, a black man's eyes wells up in the dark. Away from his peers. Away from his queen. Away from his offspring.
That's right.
Coming to a fork in the road and not realizing that he cannot stand still. Cause sometimes life isn't about right or wrong, just left or right.
Gotta keep it moving.
The stress, the pressure, the respect of your woman, the admiration of your child. Almost obsolete as the breadwinner when the flower is provided by the enemy. If your only resource is labor, or at least that's what they'll pay for.
Slavery, God.
What happens when they can get it for cheaper?
Man up.
Have we got an amnesia as to what a man is and what a man does?
Like power.
Is the possibility of death too great? Is the fear of physical confinement hindering your proper judgment?
I just got locked up last week.
See, death is a guarantee. And you might just get knocked just because.
That's word.
Now, your woman condescends, cause she just can't understand how she could get a job, but you cannot.
Gotta create our own job.
And look at the places you go, and the people you fraternize with, cause they say a lot about your character. And whether you are who you say you are.
Soldier.
White supremacy has struck a deadly blow, but our vital signs persist. When we know better, an excuse is just an excuse.
Up, stop talking,
and whether you fully comprehend or not,
ew, Lord.
You're a man.
Stand up, let them know, Lord.
And manhood is your birthright.
Stand up.
It is your job to know what that entails, black man.
Stand up,
and it cannot be defined by our natural adversary.
Clean up.
For his ways are not ours. Do we allow our boys to be feminized?
Hell no.
Do we allow our girls to be masculinized?
Hell no.
Because sheep get on the defensive,
Or do we muster manhood and stand firm on our principles?
Staying strong, Lord.
I leave that up to you, brother. But as you dry your face and contemplate your next move, keep in mind the devils love doubt. And if you don't know how to be a man, they will show you how.
It's wartime. Cypher.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. We're in open forum, Friday freestyle, so to speak, and you can get involved in the conversation, too, by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're in open forum conversation, roundtable discussion with two of our hosts, Brother Oshi, African Perspectives. Ooh, I think something is happening in somebody's background. Yeah, two of our hosts, Brother Oshi with African Perspectives, on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 9 to 11, from 11 to 1, I'm sorry, and Dr. William Rogers, Black Reality Think Tank, Saturdays, 4 to 6. Brothers, you know, it was an interesting conversation we was having on several different topics this evening. One thing I want to raise is a discussion that we had near the tail end of the program Sunday, Brother Richard, when we was talking about our ancestors and the meeting that was conducted between representatives of the government and some of our ancestors. Is everybody still there?
I'm still here.
Yeah.
I'm here.
Okay, I'm hearing a lot of noise in the background. Somebody.
Sorry.
Okay. We'll be all right. Let's move forward. You know, we were talking about on Sunday when I read the segment dealing with the Crispus Attucks and the way one of this country's founding fathers characterized him in defense of the British soldiers that gunned him down, along with three others, in that incident that started the Revolutionary War. When he was characterized in the court sessions because John Adams defended the British soldiers that fired upon Attucks and three others and said that, quote-unquote, that Attucks was a common thug and not a political freedom fighter. And that attitude towards Attucks that was had by one of the founding fathers persists today. Those sentiments were expressed almost 300 years ago in reference to Crispus Attucks, and it can be used on Joe Blow or Bobby from the neighborhood. That's how they still feel about you, the same way John Adams felt about Crispus Attucks in 1770. We also stated about our ancestors that fought in the Civil War, because it was three things going on during that Civil War. You had the Union, quote unquote the Union, and Lincoln fighting to save the Union during the Civil War. The South fighting to preserve their monetary interest in slavery and continuing it, and then our people that got involved to free themselves. And we were talking about that in relation to some of our people falling into the narrative of when these days roll around, like Memorial Day and others, running around and thank you for your service, talking to other black people when our people fought for this country and what they were faced with when they got back here. Richard shared with me a minutes from a historic meeting that was had with representatives sent by Lincoln to meet with African-American leaders right after the Civil War. The date of the meeting was February 13th, 1865. The meeting was held in Savannah, Georgia. And I want to share with the listening audience the minutes of this meeting, the subject matter that was discussed, and to get your feelings, your brother's feelings on this. and the listening audience if they choose to get involved. Because I think that when we talk about our ancestors, because you hear it all the time, especially around time when it's election season and black politicians go into black neighborhoods and try to rally the black vote, the first thing they do is put the guilt trip on people that's not participating, saying that our ancestors died for the right to vote. And, well, they do it for other reasons. But some of our people that parrot that expression is doing our ancestors a disservice, because our ancestors didn't just die to minimize it, talking about the right to vote. Our ancestors wanted freedom, and they wanted freedom from white supremacy and freedom basically from this man. You still there, Brother Richard and
yes.
Dr. Rogers? Okay, good. Mm-hmm. Dr. Rogers, you still there?
Yes.
Okay, ma'am. Good. I want to share with the listening audience this article that Brother Richard pulled for me. He's a wealth of information, being that he's at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia. It was a newspaper account of a meeting between black leaders and the Union military authorities. The writer was from New York. The date was February 13th, 1865. And it's minutes of an interview between the colored ministers and church officers at Savannah with the Secretary of War and Major General Sherman. At the headquarters of General Sherman in the city of Savannah, January 12th, 1865, at 8 o'clock in the evening. On the evening of Thursday, the 12th day of January, 1865, the following persons of African descent met with an appointed meant by appointment to hold an interview with Edwin M. Stanton, Secretary of War, and Major General Sherman, to have a conference upon matters relating to the freedmen of the state of Georgia. And it names all the brothers that were there. The first was William J. Campbell. And I want the listening audience to, because it kind of struck me as, I was amazed at the men and what they were able to amass. And Brother Richard, you can jump in on this. What they were able to amass basically right out of slavery. As far as the money generated by our ancestors. But I want to read to you some of the things, because it gives a little bio of each man that was there. And I'm going to continue to share this with the listening audience. The first was William J. Campbell, age 51, born in Savannah, a slave until 1849, and then liberated by his mistress, Miss May Maxwell. For 10 years, he pastored the First Baptist Church of Savannah, numbering about 1,800 members. The church property belonging to the congregation and trustees was worth $18,000. Number two was John Cox, age 58, born in Savannah, a slave until 1849, when he brought his freedom for $1,100. He pastored the Second African Baptist Church. In the ministry for 15 years, his congregation was 1,222 persons. The church property was worth $10,000 belonging to the congregation. The third was Ulysses L. Houston, age 51, born in Grantsville County, South Carolina, a slave until the Union Army entered Savannah. Owned by Moses Henderson of Savannah, the pastor of Third African Baptist Church, the congregation numbered 400 people. The church property was worth $5,000 and belongs to the congregation, and he was in the ministry for 8 years. Fourth was William Bentley, age 72, born in Savannah, a slave until 25 years of age, when his master John Waters emancipated him by will. Pastor of Andrews Chapel, church, only one of the denominations, and only one of that denomination in Savannah. The congregation numbered 360 members. The church property was worth $20,000 and was owned by the congregation. And he has been in the ministry about 20 years, a member of the Georgia Conference. Charles Bagwell, age 40, born in Liberty County, Georgia, a slave until 1851, emancipated by will in his master, J.L. Bradwell, a local preacher in charge of the Methodist Church, Andrews Chapel, in the absence of the minister, and he was in the ministry 10 years. William Gaines, age 41, born in Wills County, Georgia, a slave until the Union forces freed him, owned by Robert Toombs, formerly United States Senator, and his brother, Gabriel Toombs. He was a local preacher in the AME Church in the ministry 16 years. Taylor Gladstone, age 72, born in Wilkes County, Georgia, a slave until the Union Army came, owned by A.P. Wetters, a local preacher at the AME Church in the ministry for 35 years. Garrison Frazier, age 67, born in Granville County, North Carolina, a slave until 8 years ago when he brought himself and his wife, paying $1,000 in gold and silver, is ordained minister in the Baptist Church. His health is failing, but now has no congregation in his charge, but has been in the ministry 35 years. Abraham Burke, 48, born in Brown County, Georgia, a slave until 20 years ago when he brought himself for $800 and have been in the ministry 10 years. Arthur Wardell, age 44, getting a little interference in somebody's background also. Arthur Wardell, age 44, born in Liberty County, Georgia, a slave until freed by the Union Army, owned by A.A. Solomons in Savannah, and is a licensed minister in the Baptist Church. Andrew Neal, 61, born in Savannah, a slave until the Union Army liberated him, owned by William Gibson, and had been a deacon in the Third Baptist Church for 10 years. James Porter, age 39, born in Charleston, South Carolina, born by his mother, who had been freed and purchased her freedom, a lay reader and president of the Board of Wardens and Vestry in the Colored Episcopal Church in Savannah, had been commissioned 9 years. The congregation was about 200 persons. The church property was worth $10,000 and was owned by the congregation. Rob Taylor, Ronald L. Taylor, 51, born in Wilkes County, Georgia, a slave until the Union armies came and freed him. He was owned by August P. Wetters, a class reader in Wetters Chapel, for 9 years. The church property was worth $5,000 and owned by the congregation of 150 people. It says Frazier Garrison had been chosen by the persons to present and express their common sentiments about the matters of inquiry and make answers to the inquiry as follows. Now, the person that they chose to represent them was Garrison Frazier. And let me go back to remind the listening audience. Garrison Frazier, 67, was born in Granville County, North Carolina, a slave until 8 years ago when he brought himself and his wife, paying $1,000 in gold and silver, and had been a minister for 35 years, but no congregation. All of these men had been ordained ministers, similar to Nat Turner, by Europeans to go around and proselytize other blacks on plantations leading up to and after the Civil War when they were quote-unquote free. Now, here's some of the comments that were made by government representatives to some of our ancestors, and listen to their sentiments in reference to how they felt about the government and their situation. It says Garrison Frazier had been chosen by the rest of the men to present and express their common sentiments upon the matters of inquiry and to make answers to the inquiries as follows. First, the state. What is your understanding in regards to the act of Congress and President Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation touching the condition of colored people in the rebel states? Answer. So far as I understand President Lincoln's proclamation to the rebellious states, it is that if they would lay down their arms and submit to the laws of the United States before the 1st of January, 1863, all should be well. But if they do not, then all of the slaves in the rebel states should be henceforth and forever free. That is what my understanding is. The second question. State what you understand by slavery and the freedom that was given to be given by the President's proclamation. The answer. Slavery is receiving an irresistible power of work of another man and not by his consent. The freedom, as I understand it, promised by the proclamation is making us from under the yoke of bondage to placing us where we can reap the fruit of our own labor and take care of ourselves and assist in our own freedom. Question. State what manner you think you can take care of yourselves and how you can best assist the government in maintaining your freedom. Answer. The way we can take care of ourselves is to have land and turn it and till it by our own labor. That is, by the labor of our men, our women, and our children, and our old men. We can soon maintain ourselves and have something to spare. And the government can assist. The young men can enlist their services to the government and serve in such manner as they may be wanted. The rebels told us that they piled, The rebels told us that they piled themselves up and made batteries of them and sold them to Cuba. But we don't believe that. We want to be placed on land of ours until we able to buy it and make it our own. Question. State what manner you would rather live, whether scattered among whites or colonies by yourselves. Answer. I would prefer to live by ourselves. But there is a prejudice against us in the South that will take years to get over. But I do not know that I can answer for all of my brethren. Mr. Lynch says that he thinks that we should be separated also and live by ourselves. All of the other persons present, questioned one by one, answered that they agree with Brother Frazier. The question, do you think that there is intelligence enough among the slaves of the South to maintain themselves under the government of the United States in equal protection as under the laws and maintain good and peaceful relations among yourselves and your neighbors? Answer, I think there is sufficient intelligence among us to do so. Question, what is the feeling of the black population of the South towards the government and towards the United States? What is the understanding in respect to the present war and its causes and objectives and their dispositions to aid either side? Fully state your views. And then it went on to make interesting statements by our ancestors in relation to what they felt about this government, their status and how they felt, and what they thought would be best for our people during that period. The thing I want to kind of get you men to expound on is the amounts of money that was raised by our people fresh out of servitude to Europeans, how they were able to network one with another and raise these amounts of monies. Number two, when asked direct questions by the representatives of the United States government what they wanted, our ancestors said they wanted land and they wanted to be separate from Europeans because they didn't feel as though that they would ever have any type of relations with Europeans. I just wanted, because those things are not discussed among our people. You know, when some of our people that are in quote-unquote leadership positions or even educating our children, they don't go back and touch the minds of our ancestors and see what they really felt about their situation and about their former captors. We can see here from the minutes of this meeting that everybody was on the same page with their representative that they chose to speak for, that they wanted land and they wanted to be separate from Europeans. I just wanted your feelings on that those statements that were made by our ancestors.
Okay. I'll start out. When was the date of the meeting again? 1865, you said?
Yes. Let me, for the listening audience, let me repeat that date again. On the evening of Thursday, January 12th, 1865, and it took place at the headquarters of Major General Sherman in the city of Savannah.
Okay. One of the things that, I heard in terms of your reading is that these men, some names I did recognize, some that I didn't, were actually following a long line of previous ancestors, you know, starting it back into the 1700s, who also professed a lot of the philosophy that they did, and they were all centered around an organization that actually started in Philadelphia called the Free African Society.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the Free African Society was the group of men made up of Richard Allen, Absalom Jones, who at the time had not organized into a logistical church, but had organized into a force of bringing people together and looking at the plight of African people in this country and in Africa, and making moves to begin to, you know, correct some of that. Some of the people that came out of this movement were people like Prince Hall. This was in the 1700s out of Boston. Prince Hall was a major force. There was another man whose name was Lot Carey, L-O-T-T-C-A-R-E-Y. He's better known as a missionary.
Okay.
But Lot Carey was a philosophical revolutionary who wanted to connect Africa to our people. And a lot of the effort in terms of Liberia and some of those early creations, which started again in the 1700s, with people like Paul Cuffy and others talking about that land necessity and having to grasp that as first. So I think what you're hearing now in 1865 is a continuation of that now, obviously the political system of chattel slavery is getting ready to come to a halt. We've got to keep this moving. And they had built a significant force between that early 1700 and that time. A lot of it was quiet, but if you go back and you read some of the book, there was a book written by a brother called The Autobiography of a People. And I'll think of his name in a minute. And that book was spelling out documentation, just like you just did, of people who were living during that time and what they felt.
Mm-hmm.
And this idea that we are hearing here is coming from that period of time and from that wind of people. And so when by the time you get, and also from that, this is where a lot of the black colleges pick up from, you know, because this group pulled people like Wilberforce and others to come to the table and work. Like in this case, Sherman, and some of the others to come and work with an already independent organization of African people called the Free African Society. And like I said, this organization started back 1780-something, you know, somewhere in there. And it started out of that Methodist Episcopal Church, St. George, I think it was. And it was from there they went to Philadelphia. They started the Bethel African American AME Church as an organized system. So that's what you're hearing.
Mm-hmm.
You are hearing the philosophy of those thinkers. This was a organized body of thinkers focused around the black church on what needs to happen in black life, you know, to free ourselves from this captivity. Mm-hmm. And I think that you could, you know, when you start looking at folk like Martin Delaney, Henry Bishop Turner,
yes.
Who come later, and right there in Savannah, there's another guy that will come to the table about 20 years after this meeting, whose name was Richard Wright. Obviously not the Richard Wright we know from the
right.
Renaissance,
mm-hmm.
but this Richard Wright would end up starting a college that later became known as Savannah State. Mm. That's where this connection is. His name is Richard Wright. Just look him up.
Okay.
And he started an educational structure to train, just like what we were talking about, training black folks for economical purposes, you know, tilling the land. And this was all kind of in synonymous with Tuskegee and what Tuskegee was trying to do. But Savannah State was one of the first ones to start that industrial education. So I think that's my input into that based on, you know, my reading and understanding that whole period of time.
Okay.
My feeling is that even though we were asked, what is it that you want to see happen? And we mentioned land, we mentioned being separate,
mm-hmm.
you know, but the reality is we're in a midst of an open, sworn enemy. Even though after our enslavement, even after the short 10 years of Reconstruction and so forth, and the movement of our people, and we finally settled in wherever we were, wherever that was, didn't make any difference if it was north, south, east, or west.
Mm-hmm.
And we settled in, and we collectively got it together. The envy and jealousy and mean spirit and evilness of Caucasians would not let that happen. And we had to come together because of segregation and no one really wanted to deal with us. So we just say, that's fine. Then leave us alone. We'll get it together. We'll get it together in Rosewood, in Tulsa, in Lane, Arkansas, in Boley, Oklahoma, and many other places. But what happened was when they saw that we were doing well amongst ourselves, then they vamped on our communities with any excuse. They vamped on our communities. They stole the property, burned what was left, and either killed us or imprisoned us or exiled us. You know, and that today, at this moment in time, there's not a place in America where we can say that's a community that is self-contained, that everything in that community is either run or controlled by us. There is nowhere. There is nowhere where there's a community that we have economic life, that their business is like it was, even the most contemporary one, which is the Haiti community in Raleigh-Durham. And that was destroyed by the Model Cities program running an expressway through there. So there's nowhere that it happened. So even though they asked us, and this is what we said, and even though after that, I believe maybe 40 acres and a mule was promised, but still, we're in a situation where we have a people who, because of their evolutionary development, are selfish, greedy, and don't want to share, mean-spirited and evil. And so my contention is that either we unify or we die. In fact, we should get T-shirts. Remember they had that like that? What was that when Barack was running in 08? Vote or die? Pump that. You know, and you're right. Our people didn't die trying to damn vote. Okay? I hate when we say that.
Yeah.
Our people died for the right to vote. I mean, what difference was that going to make? In fact, we have more of us who are elected in elected leadership today than we have ever had. and our condition is worse as a people. Yep. So, I mean, the right to vote and who you vote for, all that madness, bump that. We need brothers and sisters who are committed enough, honest enough, have the integrity and the fortitude to bring us together, stay with us, and then work this situation out so we can get the hell up out of here. I know. Okay. Somebody said, well, where are you going to go, right? Where are you going to go? Well, you know, Marcus Garvey said, you know, when somebody said about Jamaica, what? I would give up a continent for an island? Are you a fool? You know, we have a continent to deal with. And everybody wants a piece of that continent. It's just like Dr. John Henry Clark says, everybody, you know, wants a piece of it, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for it. And that's what's been happening. It is, we have just as much right to help liberate Africa. In fact, the most technologically advanced Africans on the planet reside right here. So we have even more than a right to help liberate Africa. We are the real key to the liberation of Africa, not in a arrogant, smug way like when the brothers went back to Africa, to Liberia, and had this arrogant attitude because I'm from the States and I've been gone from here a few hundred years and y'all some savages. And then, of course, vice versa, because the Caucasian always sows the seeds of discourse, always tries to manipulate that division. But the bottom line is they need us, we need them, we need each other. Let's make it happen.
I agree. I fully agree. Brother Richard?
I walked away with, I'm going to say, two lessons for this moment, you know, of that. You see, and I agree with Dr. Rogers in the sense of the network to be able to amass. I mean, $10,000 was no joke. And you're talking about 1865. So these still are, and as you said, a lot of them were still enslaved Africans, right? And they were still able to do to amass I don't know how to put that, but when you're able to, you really don't own your own time, your own body, but you can be able to amass their currency by the social network that you've been able to create. And you're talking about 1,200, 500, a congregation of that size,
mm-hmm.
in an area where there really was had to have some kind of, because it wasn't like these were just people just able to walk around mm-hmm. and do this, right? I mean, I don't think so. 1865. I mean, the war just ended. Over.
Yeah.
So it obviously this is some project that they've been on, even if they were utilized in doing this collective cooperative behavior, having this social relationship with each other, knowing that they taking the little bit that they have and pulling it together to be able to even acquire a material outcome called a church, a place of worship. And knowing that, you know, so that's one side. The thing that struck me, or I take from the Free African Society to that moment, that making of a people is why I say American Africans, because it's too, and in that I'm saying those people didn't necessarily were thinking sovereignty more than thinking that they were a part of the American project, as I call it. And Yes, I'm of that history, of that blood, but I'm also, in my what I take away is what I understand is a distinction in the sense of being a new people and not a part of the American project. I have American, I mean, the way I see it, I have American citizenship, and I always have to personalize it because I don't know how to deal with it in abstraction. I have American citizenship, therefore I have American rights to the degree that the state will give me, even as being considered an enemy of the state. You know, the Dred Scott decision makes that clear. But my project is to be an African, and therefore a global African, and reconnecting with the continent as a global African. That's a different project than the American African project. And when you being in Philadelphia and looking at Philadelphia history, that one thing that Absalom Jones and Richard Allen and those men who assembled that Free African Society, because they were there during the Revolutionary War, James Fort and going on down, they consciously, in my opinion, took a part of the American project, but they knew they had to, they were in a hostile environment. So I take that lineage that those, and that's why, you know, the voting thing and, you know, we're, you know, the American thing, I take that that's what they, you know, emphasize. And they emphasize it within their church body, that they were Christians. And that's what, even when they went to Liberia, they took on the Western Christian notion, the European Christian notion, the American Euro-Christian notion, the American African Euro-Christian notion. And I make that distinction because African Christianity of America is different than European Christianity. I mean, we can't deny that. Africans looked at, utilized Christianity in North America, particularly, in a whole different way, just like people say that the people in Haiti or the Caribbeans utilize the Catholicism in a different way than the Catholics did. So I think that we should always, in dealing with our history, be clear there is a distinction about American African Christianity. But it does have that Euro, and as Brother Osi said, that kind of you heathens, and then it's us. You know, and that helps me make that there's a distinction in relationship to their project. I ain't saying their project is wrong. We don't know in the end which one is going to be the transformative project. But we can't, in my opinion, we can't lump us all together. You can't lump what Denmark Vesey and Gabel Prosser and what they were trying to accomplish, the type of sovereignty that they were trying to accomplish is different than the type of, if you want to call it sovereignty, but the type of political formation that those came out of that taking the American project on. They didn't particularly want sovereignty. They just wanted to be free. They wanted to be able to have ownership of their own labor. And I think there's a difference. And I think that, there's a distinction. So I commend, and I think it's lessons for us to learn in relationship to the social relationship, because we don't have that social relationship today that can be able to take those pennies. And I believe that social relationship, carrying it into the 20th century, is why Garvey was able to pull together that $6 million members in such a short time. Because of that formation was already in existence.
And
they were already amassing, and because they were already looking at those things.
And the people were mentally ready for it.
Right.
Now,
because the oppression was there.
Exactly.
You know, out of those rides. So, yes. Yeah.
Now, Brother Oshie, you mentioned that that reclamation needs to take place on both sides of the Atlantic, so to speak.
Yes.
Now, I fully agree with what you're saying. Let me share with you, and we got 12 minutes to go in the program. I want to share with you a address that was made at a graduation at the University of Dar es Salaam on June 19th of 2017 by a professor there on the continent by the name of Lumumba, Professor Lumumba. Listen to what he states in reference to what you said, Brother Oshie, because I think what you said is profound. And when I say profound, it's a statement that has been made before.
No doubt.
But I think it's something that our people really need to take to heart, because the linkage is there. The linkage has been broken by this European, and he don't want it reestablished. But the linkage is there, especially from conscious brothers and sisters on both sides of this Atlantic. Let me play this for our listening audience, and some of the time we have remaining, and listen, we got the freedom to go over if we choose to, if you want to make some comments on it. But I want to share this in reference to what you just stated, Brother Oshie. Let's hear his comments and see if you see any linkage in what you stated. I got to try to pull this up here with no problems. Let me get it together here. Hold on. Give me 2 seconds here.
And in order to do justice to that subject and to remain faithful to my chosen subject, which is a call for hygiene in African politics, there is a sense in which one must take a historical journey, if only to appreciate the factors that animated Africans to seek to regain their independence from the colonial masters. Historians will remind us that we were first enslaved, that Africans were taken, and this we seldom say, the first civilization to take Africans out of this continent were the Arabs. And they took Africans from the eastern coast. And it is sad that in that part of the world, there are not many Africans who remained, because it was in the business of the Arab enslaver to castrate Africans. We never say that, but we must say it, because it is historically significant. Then the Europeans came, the Portuguese came, the Spaniards came, the Germans came, the French came, the Belgians came. Africa became the hunting ground for the European colonizers, and we were the sport. We built, our ancestors built the United States of America. Our ancestors built Europe. And when slavery had lost its shine and sheen, the Europeans abolished it. But they replaced it with yet another pernicious enterprise, the colonization of Africa. The Europeans sat in Berlin, in Germany, in 1884, and they looked at the map of Africa and puzzled it out. The British had their share. The Germans had their share, and Tanzania or Tanganyika was their share, as was Rwanda and Burundi. The Spaniards were Johnny Come Latelys in the arena, and they got little Equatorial Guinea and Southwest Africa. The French were here. The Portuguese were here. And we were colonized. This time round, they did not take us away. They came here and they controlled us. And they told us, not in so many words, that we were children of a lesser God. And we were treated as if we were children of a lesser God. In fact, they told us that on the day of creation, we were merely hewers of wood and drawers of water. And if anybody were to doubt it in 1948, it was more blatant when Hendrik Verfoot instituted the apartheid regime in South Africa. But yet there is a sense in which the God that we worship never sleeps. The colonial enterprise ran its course. And the European tribes, the Europeans never called themselves tribes, they called them nations, were engaged in a war. First in 1918, the European tribes fought. And they had something called the League of Nations, which died. Then they fought again in 1945. And what is unique about the European nations is that when they are engaged in tribal wars, they call them world wars. So there was another war between 1945, 1939, and 1945. And after that, a new kid on the block, the United States of America, took the lead in saying that colonialism was something that was undesirable. But at that time, Africans were never quiet. Those who had been taken out had already started agitating. Many of us here will remember Marcus Garvey, of whom Bob Marley says, Garvey was a Buffalo soldier in the heart of America. And many of us will remember W.E.B. Du Bois. Many of us will remember that they started agitating that Africans must regain their dignity and their independence. And indeed, in 1847, in Liberia, a small group of Africans were brought back in Monrovia, and Liberia became the first independent black nation in the continent of Africa. So soon thereafter, in Sierra Leone, they also created yet another colony. But Africa was colonized, except Ethiopia, which they tried to take in 1938 and exiled Professor Dr. Haile Selassie. And unfortunately, they were defeated, as you remember, in the Battle of Adowa. Africa can defeat European tribes. This history is necessary that we are able to appreciate the freedom that we gained. So that Garvey came, W.E.B. Du Bois came, but there was another crop after the 1940s who had had the advantage of European education. And there were people in Europe also who are beginning to recognize that indeed equality was necessary. And this was not anything new. In 1776 in the United States of America, the American state sitting in Philadelphia in the United States of America declared unto themselves that all men are born equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among those are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. A few years later in France, after the revolution, they also recognized that we were to be equal. So that the colonized nations which had now taken Africans thought that they were safe. They had taken Leopold Sédar Senghor from Senegal to Paris, and they thought that they were creating a little Frenchman. Little did they know that they were creating somebody who would want to overthrow them. They took Félix Houphouët-Boigny from Côte d'Ivoire, and they thought that they were creating somebody who would be subservient to them. They took Ahmed Sekou Touré and Modibo Keita, and they thought they were safe. Little did they know that they were creating the future leaders and agitators against French colonization. And it did not stop there. The Portuguese also took Agostinho Neto and Amilcar Cabral and Eduardo Mondlane to Lisbon. Little did they know that those individuals would be the catalyst that would be necessary in the process of decolonization. The British also had their fair share. They took others. They took Mwalimu Kambarage Nyerere, Hastings Kamuzu Banda, Kenneth David Kaunda, and many others to the United Kingdom, Jomo Kenyatta. Little did they know that those would be the individuals who sometimes later, and in Ghana, of course, they took the Osagyefo Kwame Nkrumah, and in Nigeria they took Dr. Nnamdi Azikiwe, Abubakar Tafawa Balewa, and Sah Ahmadu Bello, the Sultan of Sokoto. There is a sense, therefore, in which these individuals started recognizing that having been enslaved, having been colonized, we now had to liberate ourselves. And the agitation started. And Kwame Nkrumah and his Ghana acquired independence in 1957. And I still can hear Kwame Nkrumah through the vicissitudes of time saying in Accra, Ghana, that Ghana is free and will never be colonized again. But the freedom of Ghana means nothing if the rest of Africa is not free. I can hear Mwalimu Julius Kambarage Nyerere saying that he's prepared to delay the independence of Tanganyika so that Tanganyika, Kenya, Uganda would become independent at one time. Mwalimu could see the future with the exactitude of a Jewish prophet. Jomo Kenyatta and Obote could not. And therefore, we gained independence as separate states, and the story will be told shortly. So what do we see? The agitation, the demand by the people that we must be decolonized. And why is it that we were asking that we must be decolonized? Why is it that we were demanding that we must regain our independence? Because throughout the ages, it was always the divine plan that men must be masters of their destiny. And when we gained our independence, the leaders of the day were eloquent as they were clear that the reason why we were asking to be independent is because we wanted to take charge of our affairs. We wanted to be the governors. We wanted to have our young men and women acquire education. We wanted to control the production of our food through agriculture. We wanted to build our infrastructure. We wanted to improve the quality of the lives of our people by improving their health. We wanted to eliminate poverty. We were clear on what we wanted, and this message was as clear in West Africa as it was clear in East Africa, as it was clear in Central Africa, as it was clear in Northern Africa, so that if you listen to Kwame Nkrumah, it's as if you'd listen to Agostino Neto, and if you listen to Neto, it's as if you'd listen to Samora Moses Machel, and if you listen to Ahmed Ben Bella in the Maghreb, it's as if you'd listen to Patrice Emery Lumumba.
Brother Oshie.
Yes, I'm here, brother.
I think the sentiments by that professor to that graduating class, it was a large number of young people listening. Those sentiments, when he was talking about the ancestors that were here, he mentioned Garvey, he mentioned W.E.B. Du Bois, and the agitation that the brothers seen over there, which caused... When he was mentioning those revolutionary leaders that had been taken away to France and to Spain to learn, he said thinking that they would become little Frenchmen, that they came back and was revolutionary in their country. It's the same thing that's going to happen now. I agree with what you were saying earlier. But the sentiments that professor was speaking is some of the same sentiments that's going on here. It's happening on both shores. I just thought it was timely to play that message in relation to what you were saying.
I agree. Thank you so much, Brother Elliot. And I definitely agree. I think the timing is right now. And although we don't see it happening on the continent, when we don't see it happening here in the Western Hemisphere or in Europe, we don't see it happening, but there's pockets. And they'll continue to grow because of our voices and our commitment to this medium we have to throw that information out there. Because so a lot of times, if you don't hear it and you don't see it or read it, you know, and you're bombarded, because you're bombarded 24/7, 365
with negativity,
with the BS
I know
that this system gives you you know. And so, and that's negative. And that's notions of your inferiority or your inability to come together and all the other distortions and lies that they have said about us, you know. So we definitely need to look at those courageous leaders on the continent and here in this country and use them as the model. Read them, emulate them, advocate for what they were advocating for, which of course is African independence, African self-determination, African liberation, and African sovereignty. And to me, there is no other discussion. There is nothing else that we need to talk about. That's what must happen. When Nkrumah said what he said about Africa must be united, followed by Latrice Lumumba and Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop said it as well, and Idi Amin Dada said it as well. Muammar Gaddafi said it. The old lion who has just been just deposed, he said it. I'm not saying anything new. I don't have any new ideas at all anyway. I just believe and read our ancestors, believe in our ancestors, those men and women who fought hard for the independence of the African mind, for the independence of African people, for the independence of African land. And so I applaud the brother Screech. He was right on point. And I'm hoping that those young people listen and internalize it, but more importantly, will act on it to unite Africa, to unite Africans throughout the diaspora. Malcolm said it best. He says, we as African people will never be respected until Africa is liberated and controlled by African people. We will never be respected. And Brother Jay says it all the time because Dr. Clark said it. We have no friends. We have no friends on this planet. You see the damn Chinese in Africa, I'm quite sure we treat them very well. I saw a piece on Africans in China, how we were dogged out.
Mm-hmm.
And we're dogged out everywhere, you know? So we have no friends. You want a friend? Go look in the mirror. And don't leave that mirror until you like what you see. Not that you like your arched eyebrows or the shape of your damn nose. No, you like who you see, who you are culturally, who you are spiritually, who you are historically. Like who you see and come out and embrace one another.
Brothers, we're coming up on the end of the program, and I want to thank you guys for being with us. Before we go, Dr. Rogers?
Yes.
What can the listening audience expect tomorrow?
Oh, okay. Tomorrow we are looking at abortion as a genocide, and I have a young woman who is the head of a health organization in Wisconsin that's going to talk about it from the female reproductive perspective and from the health issue, to kind of lay an opinion on the table as it relates to that. So I think that should be a real lively discussion.
Okay. And that's African, that's the Black Reality Think Tank. That's tomorrow, that's Saturday, 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Looking forward to the conversation. And I want to thank both of you brothers for being with us. Dr. William Rogers and Brother Hoshi. African Perspectives is growing in popularity daily, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 11 to 1. I want to thank both of you for being with us.
Thank you, Brother Elliot. Thank you, Brother Richard.
Thank you. You'll keep me awake when I'm supposed to be doing something.
That's good. All right, Doc Rogers, bless you, man.
All right. Thank you, brother. Thank you.
We'll talk soon.
Brother Richard.
All right, now. You take care, Doc.
All right, now. Peace. Richard, interesting conversation with Brother Hoshi and Dr. William Rogers.
Yes.
Love to have them on with Time for Awakening. Their programs has really been a blessing to have with us, the voices there, the knowledge that can be dispensed and is going to be dispensed. It's without measure. I'm just glad that they're with us.
Yes, I'm glad too. It makes it so that we know that we're not alone. We may be looking at it from different degrees, but we're looking at the same thing. And that's that freedom, liberation, and the unification of Africa and African people.
Well, we're coming up on the end of another program. I want to thank everybody for being with us this evening. And before we go, Richard, this roundtable discussion that we've had again, I think it's very interesting. I like doing it. I think that's something that we can do maybe every month and a half or so, to bring the host on. We'll expand the discussion too, because it's a few others. I want to get Tamara on here to give the Black Millennials voice.
Oh,
get her involved. Great. So we'll do this and we'll just expand the discussion. I think it was very interesting. I want to thank the listening audience for being with us this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Sunday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Or you're watching your children playing after school. They seem to be so unaware. I know the thing that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Soon it will be their turn. Such a small part of the thing that they'll soon be right at the heart of. My little Tommy, he said he wants to be a fireman.
Children.